Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Chronic Command podcast. And today I've got two very special guests. We've got a duo, in fact, from the Build, Paint, and Play live stream channel on YouTube that I've been a participant on just recently, talking to the guys about hobby, painting, Games Workshop, everything. They're both, I believe, ex-Games Workshop members or staff members from the past. So, of course, we've got Dave Taylor. Now, Dave Taylor was a previous guest on the podcast before, but Jake's a new member coming on for the very first time. But I really wanted to introduce you both to both of these great gentlemen in the hobby and to learn about their story and why they began this crusade for people to build, paint, and play with their miniatures on the table. So both of you guys, welcome, and good evening to you both.
Cool. Yeah, thanks very much for having us, Josh.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. So, of course, Dave's been on the podcast before, so we know a little bit about Dave's previous experiences with how he got into the hobby and that kind of thing and his journey through Games Workshop and where that took him. So for Jake, mate, tell us about yourself, like where you're from and, you know, how did you get into this weird, wonderful hobby of ours?
Sure. I'm sure your listeners are going to be like, who is this guy? Why is he on the show? So I, like a lot of us, I got into, like, you know, mini wargaming and miniature painting when I was a lot younger. Pretty sure I was in grade school. I think it all started with, like, Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, painting the old metal, white metal, Ral Partha minis and stuff like that. And then my first exposure to Games Workshop was I went to a Dungeons and Dragons, like, I don't want to call it a convention because it was, like, really tiny, but basically it was like a proto convention. And it was a lot of, like, gaming related stuff. And there was a guy who had a little booth set up and they had the old RTB Rogue Trader box of Space Marines. And so I picked it up and 12-year-old Jake was like, oh, this is so cool. What is this? And the guy started talking to me and my ADHD kicked in and I zoned out while he was talking. And in my brain, I was like, look at these Crimson Fists fighting all these guys. Like, I didn't know they were Crimson Fists, but, like, I was like, look at all these guys. Like, this looks super cool. So I bought them and I bought, I think, a White Dwarf and took it home and, you know, went nuts. And this is back when White Dwarf had, like, advertisements for, like, Dungeons and Dragons and, like, other games like Dark Future and all that sort of stuff. And just kind of fell in love with it. And I built the models. And I had built model kits like World War II planes and the USS Enterprise and stuff like that. But I had never built minis to paint, if that makes sense. And I was like, this is weird. It's like this cool mashup of two things that I like, painting minis and building models, but it's the same thing. So I painted them up and then a couple years went by and my cousin came over and he was like, he saw, like, I had a bunch of different ones that I had painted and he was like, oh, you play this game? And I was like, there's a game? Like, I thought it was just like D&D. So I got sucked into it again. And then I think I was in college when I started playing pretty regularly. I think it was during third edition 40K, I believe. And then while I was in college, I got hired by Games Workshop and I was working part-time. And then when I graduated, they snapped me up and gave me a store. And then I worked for the company for like 6 years. And within probably 6 months, I got promoted to running the Bunker store. It's one of the big ones here in the States. At one point, we had four. There was one in Boston, which was the one that I ran. There was one in Chicago. There was one in Glen Burnie, Maryland, which is where HQ was. And then there was one on the West Coast. I think, Dave, was it LA or Seattle?
LA.
Okay. But so I was running the Boston store. So I got flown down to Baltimore all the time. And that's how I met Dave. I met Dave, I want to say I met Dave in like 2003 or 2004. So, I mean, I've known Dave for like 20 years now. Dave, you know, Dave is super charming and, like, very welcoming and was just great. It was super nice to talk to him. And at that point, there was a U.S. edition of White Dwarf, which I think there were several different, like, national editions. But yep. So Dave and our buddy John Schaefer, who's on the Four Warlords with us, and a couple other guys, they were all, like, the core of the White Dwarf U.S. staff. So it was really cool. Like, it was definitely a nerd moment for me being like, oh, that's Dave Taylor. But it was really cool. And now I'm just kind of riding his coattails. I'm Robin to his Batman as we get to do this. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Because you stand the two of us next to each other, in no world am I the hero and
yeah. The sidekick. In real life, I'm much taller than Dave, but in legendary stature, Dave is far grander.
It balances out, right?
Yeah, it all comes out in the wash. Yeah. But yeah, after working with GW for years, I worked at a couple different companies. I was a beta tester at Fantasy Flight. I did some of their Star Wars RPG stuff, which was fun. And then I decided to just open my own store. My buddy Adam and I, who's another ex-GW, we're everywhere. Ex-GW guys are everywhere. The gaming industry is lousy with us. But so we opened my own store, and Dave and I have just kind of kept in touch ever since. And I want to say it was like coming out of the pandemic, we had talked about, like, I was thinking about maybe doing like a show about like lore, like a 40K lore stories, and going into like Horus Heresy and Necromunda and all that stuff. And Dave was like, oh, I kind of want to do like more hobby stuff. Cause he had been on another show that was good, but the wheels had kind of fallen off. Like, some of the people behind it weren't really just kind of getting it going the way that they should have. So we were like, yeah, let's just, you know, kind of get some chocolate on your peanut butter, get some peanut butter on my chocolate. Let's just Reese's Pieces this. And, you know, it turned into Dave and I doing Build, Paint, Play, which we went into being like, if this doesn't work and it's just Dave and I talking to each other for an hour and a half every week, sounds great. Like, that's fine. That is literally how we got into it. So,
yeah.
Jake, I've got a new job for you, mate. You're not just a hockey goalkeeper. I think I'm going to use your voice for our Blood Bowl battle reports, mate. I think you'll be perfect for it because you can just ramble on so quickly. I can't do it. And you've got the perfect accent for it, mate. You've got the perfect voice and everything. The perfect Blood Bowl, you know, presenter. You know?
I'm happy to do that. I was a radio DJ for a bit, so I.
Oh, there you go. There you go. You got a radio voice, mate. Honestly, yeah.
My wife says I sound like Will Arnett, and I was like, I don't really hear that, but I mean, it's your voice sounds different to yourself. So
yeah, true. Yeah, that's good.
Now that you've said that, it's totally true.
She's great, 100%
correct.
I can do the all the GMC ads and Lego Batman and all that good stuff. I would love to make some Will Arnett money. That would be great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So you talked about, you know, starting up your own store. Now, I can imagine that would be a pretty courageous step, like financially and that kind of thing. Like, what sort of got you over the line? What sort of, like, you talked about your friend there for a moment there before you said you sort of started your store. But what was the real thing that did you were always working in the game industry in some capacity. So why did you open the store, mate? What was your incentive behind that?
I think part of it was I spent a lot of my time in like corporate world. You know, I've over 2.5 decades working for different Fortune 500 companies, and I had left the corporate world and was working in the nonprofit sector, which I thought would be a nice change of pace, and it was nightmarish. Everything in the at least for the nonprofit I worked for, they're a great nonprofit and they have a great mission, but everything there moves at the speed of smell. So it just crawls along and nobody's really sure what's happening. And there's just so much waste, like just wasting time and wasting money and wasting resources. And it's crazy to me because I'm like, you're a nonprofit. Like, you don't have that sort of margin to have that. But a big part of it also came from my love of the hobby. Like, again, I've played forever. Like, I know we're not doing this. Like, we can see each other, but the folks at home are just listening to us. Like you guys behind me, it's just inundated with like nerd stuff. I have like a ton of Black Library books, and I have Star Wars memorabilia and a huge comic collection, and my Warhammer collection is insane. But I had a really bad experience at a store, and I'm not going to say what store, but I walked into a store, and this is going to be probably 7 or 8 years ago at this time.
Mm.
And I was looking, and this is how it's going to date me. I was looking for a box of original Assault Marines and a pot of Chaos Black. And I walked in, and the kid at the counter didn't even look up. He was like playing with his phone or looking at Yu-Gi-Oh cards or something. And I walked in, and it was fine. I mean, I don't need any help. I know where I'm going. But you know, I've worked in customer service for so long. Like, you always want to welcome people and be like, hey, how's it going? Like, you need any help? No. Okay, cool. Like, let me know if you got any questions. So I walked in and I go downstairs and I'm looking around and I don't see it on the shelf. And they have the old GW paint rack, which has the box on top where you could put extras, like overstock. And I'm tall enough to see that. So I'm looking through there and I'm like, nope, it's not here. So I go upstairs and I'm waiting in front of the counter, and the kid's like still get his head down, not looking at me. And I clear my throat and he looks up and he's like, oh, hey. So I said, hey, I'm looking for a box of Assault Marines and a pot of paint. And he's like, oh, I guess it's downstairs. And I was like, no, I know where it is. I'm like, I went and I looked. You don't have it. Do you guys have like back room or overstock or anything? And he's like, Oh, I don't really know. Like, I don't play that. I don't play that. And I was like, so is there somebody that can help me with this? Oh, I'm the only one here. Do you guys have a back room? No, all of our product is out. So at this point, I'm kind of like waiting for this kid to offer something. So I go, when is the, do you have anybody on staff that's like a Warhammer guy? Like, I can come in and talk to you. And he's like, oh, I don't really know. And I, inside my brain, I was like screaming. I wanted to be like, how did you get this job? Why are you here? What, who is the owner that you are stealing money from to be here? Like, this is atrocious. So I leave. I was just like, I've had it. So I went back months later, months later. I went back and I was looking for a role-playing book. Different kid, different store, identical experience. Like no attempt at help. No, like if that's me, like if you and Dave came in and you're looking for stuff, I would have been like, you know what? I don't have that, but let me take down your information and I'll have somebody reach back out to you. Or let me write down what you want and I'll make sure my boss orders it and I'll call you when it comes in. Or give me your phone number and I'll have somebody who knows how to do their job call you. Like, and zero attempt at helping me. No attempt at customer service. So a couple months go by and it's the summertime and I have a bunch of guys over the house, including Adam, who, you know, I mentioned before, and we're kind of sitting around and we're all kind of whinging like we all do about our hobby. Like, you know what I mean? Like part of the hobby is whinging about the hobby. So somebody said something like, oh, I'm trying to build, I don't remember what he was working on. I think he was, oh, he was working on Armageddon Steel Legion. And he was like, I can't find any more Steel Legion guys. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, I'm sure we can find some somewhere. We'll just have to look around. And then, you know, Adam was like, hey, didn't you have a weird experience a couple weeks ago? And I was like, yeah, I was looking for like Assault Marines and a pot of black paint, like nothing crazy. It's not like I was trying to find something, you know, untoward. It was pretty basic. So we were all kind of sitting around and I was like, why can't somebody open a store where the people know what they're doing and they carry everything and the staff is knowledgeable and it's a fun place to go and hang out and there's room to play and people just want to like hang out and have fun. And our buddy Fred went, why don't you guys just open a store? And we were like, oh, that's, it was like the light bulb went off. And I was like, all right, we could just do that. So Adam has experience running a private store out on the West Coast. And both he and I have worked for GW for years. Like I'd worked for, I think I worked for them for like 5 or 6 years. Adam was there for, I want to say like 11. And then we both went back a couple, like probably 8 years ago at this point, and they wanted us to come back and run stores. And then I was like, look, I'll help you guys. I'll be a part-timer. Like, that's fine. I love the discount, but like, I can't do this. Like I'm married and have, you know, I can't live on a GW salary. That's just not going to happen. And then we just opened the store and we were really lucky. We had a couple of people that were really excited about it and we had some investors step up. By the way, before that happens, trying to explain what a hobby store is to investors is insane. It's like explaining math to a horse.
What analogy? Yeah.
So we explained it to this one guy and he was like, so I don't understand. So why do you guys have tables? And I was like, so people can come in and play. And he's like, do you charge to use your tables? And I said, no. And he's like, then how do you make money? And I was like, because we sell everything. So we sell model kits and board games and paints and D&D stuff and card games and, you know, whatever. So he's like, I don't understand. So finally I had to be like, okay, how can I explain this to, you know, somebody who is outside our realm? Like this is a nurgling who has come from the warp that I'm trying to explain how toothbrushes work. And I was like, how do I do that? So I said, are you familiar with the Starbucks model versus like a bowling alley? And he was like, sort of. And I said, so when you go to a bowling alley, you have to pay to rent the shoes and then you pay to use the lanes and then they let you use the balls that are there or you can bring your own. I was like, but you're paying to use the lane. And he was like, right. I said, whereas at Starbucks, as long as you buy a drink and you're a quote unquote customer, you can use the Wi-Fi, you can hang out at the tables. Like that's our business model. Like we sell the stuff, you can use our tables as long as you bought the stuff here. And he was like, oh, okay. But no, we got really lucky. It was definitely like nerve-wracking to think about the amount of money that we needed up front to start a store. And it was a chunk of change. It was north of a quarter of $1 million. So we basically, I had written up a whole business plan and, you know, built into that was first, last, and security for rent, a year's worth of rent up front in the bank in case we didn't make any money. Like I padded our numbers pretty well, But I think a lot of the people that invested liked that because it showed that we had thought it through. I made sure that our salary for Adam and I was built into that number. And some guy got really mad. One guy was like, I'm not going to fund you. And I was like, why? He goes, well, because you and your guys are going to pay yourself out of the money. And I was like, right. And that's so we're not worried about our next paycheck. And instead of being here focused on the job, I'm working a second part-time job at like McDonald's or something to try to make ends meet. Like, we need to be focused on the business. So we need to be here at the business. But it was fun. Like, I mean, in March, it'll be 6 years.
Wow, mate. That's great. Fantastic.
We'll be going into our seventh year. So
that's amazing. Fantastic, mate. Yeah. Cause I've always wondered how like retailers can survive, not just through the pandemic or anything like that, but just day to day kind of business. I mean, they've got to have something there that allures people in there, either existing gamers or new people, you know, walking past your store, and you know, you want to grab them in there and try to, you know, sell them this concept of wargaming and that kind of thing. But it's really, really encouraging to hear that you yourself on this almost 7 year journey have made it, mate. So even through a pandemic of all things.
Yeah, that was a little dodgy. I'm not going to lie. It was a little dicey for a couple of months. But
absolutely, mate. Yeah. That's amazing. Now, of course, Dave is here too.
Yeah, Dave, sorry. I've been bogarting the mic. Dave,
no, not at all, mate. Not at all.
All good.
Because, I obviously brought you both in at the same time. So, you know, because you both are good friends and you know each other very well. And, of course, you do this build, paint, play live stream together. I actually did, and you did mention about Dave having started something else on a live stream. And I actually watched that for a little bit, but I can't remember what it was, but it was like a group of people painting miniatures or something and chatting. What was that? Sorry, Dave. What was that again?
Painting Happy Little Minis.
Right.
It was basically started by a mutual friend of Jake and mine, Rick Ankney, when he worked for Alliance Game Distributors. Yeah, so he was responsible for sort of video media for Alliance and Alliance and Diamond Comics distributors as well, which is one of the biggest comic distributors in the US. And basically, he put together a number of shows that would focus on or promote products that Alliance carried. So if Alliance carried Vallejo, we'd use Vallejo paints. We'd use the Army Painter as well, because they were carried by Alliance. We'd paint miniatures that were carried by Alliance, that kind of thing. So it was always like, oh, what are you working on? What are you painting there? We're painting this. We're painting, at one point, we were painting Star Wars Legion, which at the time was carried by Alliance. We're like, yeah, you can just get your local store to give their Alliance rep a call and you can get this product in your local store. It was that kind of sort of angle for it.
Yeah.
But we were doing, at the height, we were doing two shows a week, two sort of hour long live streams on Tuesday and Thursday. And it kind of progressed for a while. Then, of course, pandemic hit. We had a couple of changes. Then we worked out that we could do some painting from home. So I ended up sitting in the seat that I'm in now, and Tuesdays and Thursdays we do the live stream.
Yeah.
To the point where late in 2021, I was in Australia for a few weeks, and we did a live stream while I was there. I had to wake up sort of extra early and was able to do, or basically record the same live stream.
Yeah.
So it was pretty amazing to be able to do that. But we got to a point where our producer moved on to another career, and my co-host left to become a mum. And they didn't really, things were sort of a little bit odd at Alliance at the time. And they kind of, we were waiting to hear if there was going to be a sort of revamp of the show.
Right.
But at that time, Jake was like, yeah, I'm thinking maybe you're doing a live stream or doing a podcast. And I was like, well, I have all this extra time.
That's wonderful.
But, let's talk about it. So, yeah. And then, of course, we've just been, a lot of it's been messing around. And previously, having a producer, having a team of people who created, painting Happy Little Minis, was like, all I had to do was show up and paint and talk.
Mm.
And then I was like, okay, well, now I have to work out how to do all these things. And do we use StreamYard? Do we use OBS? Do we use something else? How do we get people to call in? And it's gone through several iterations over we're on our fourth season now. And
yeah.
It's gone through several iterations since the start.
Wonderful, guys. That's good. Yeah, because I think I just found you by chance. I think just on my YouTube feed, just popped up, and I saw your face, and I thought, oh, you're doing something new. Okay, I'll go and check it out. So that's how I sort of hopped onto that. And as I'm sitting here painting through the day, because your show starts at about 10 a.m. here, no, 9 a.m. I think 9 a.m. here in Japan. So it's a perfect time. So I, you know, take my son to school, come back. You know, put on the brew, come sit here and start work, and then watch you guys talk about various different things in the hobby and your community, and then bring on some kind of special guest and have like a, you know, a round table kind of thing where each week you have a different person on.
Yeah,
which is always interesting to see what's happening. I must say that like a lot of the terminology you use in 40K now, there's a whole new vocabulary. I don't understand any of it now. Like things you know, you and Jake are talking about, you know, your loadouts on your dreadnoughts and your vehicles and stuff like that. I don't know what it is. Like I've been so out of touch, but it's been quite a learning experience, like listening to you guys talking about the modern stuff, because yeah, I do feel out of touch with that sort of stuff now.
Yeah.
I don't think it's changed that much. I mean it's different from Rogue Trader for sure.
I'm going from second edition, mate. That's it.
but even in like in second and third edition, you could change the way a dreadnought was armed. They just changed the name. Like a Mortis pattern dreadnought had a last gun and a missile launcher.
Yeah.
And a Furioso dreadnought had two close combat claws, and a regular dreadnought had a claw and any one of like five weapons. It could have a last cannon, an assault cannon, twin heavy bolters, a multi-melta. It's the same thing now. It's just instead of making it different types of dreadnoughts, it's just like, hey, you have a dreadnought, how do you want it armed? And they've brought it back, even with the Primaris stuff, like Dave was showing last week. So his Brutalis dreadnought is the one with two close combat claws,
right?
And his Ballistus dreadnought is the old Mortis pattern, so it has a rocket launcher and last cannons. So it's all the same. They just keep changing the names because of like the, you know, they just want to own all the IP. So now instead of being,
that's true. I think that's why they've done it. Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
So you'd be fine. You're a strong swimmer. You can handle the current. You'll be good.
Yeah. I'll just use the old. This is a multi-melter, not a multi-melter.
Yep, totally fine.
The unpronounceables. Yeah.
Not a Gravis melt again. No, I would suggest, like, Jacob, I think it's important to say that, like, because you've been in 40K all through those editions.
Yeah, that's why.
It's kind of like the frog in the pot of water.
Mm.
It's like you're at the point where you haven't noticed that temperature increase, but Josh jumps in. Oh my God, I'm boiling.
With cold feet, mate. Cold feet. But look, guys, we're going to go for a quick ad break now. And when we come back, we can talk about more about the channel and the build, paint, play philosophy, and maybe about the guests you brought on or the projects you're working on, and about the community itself. So we'll be back in just a moment. If you are enjoying this podcast and the content on the Crown of Command Games YouTube channel, then please consider supporting me on Patreon. Becoming a Storm Boy allows you access to behind-the-scenes news, information on upcoming podcast guests and themes, video battle reports, and occasionally exclusive podcasts with special guests or fellow patrons. And coming soon are painting videos, which we made to give you the skills and tips on painting in the Red Period using modern paints and practical applications. And you can also access one-to-one painting lessons in the Ebi Lead Masterclass tier for a 40-minute personalized painting lesson. So check out patreon.com/ The Crown of Command Podcast. Have you always dreamed of having your old Games Workshop armies professionally painted in the style of the White Dwarf battle reports of the 1990s? Well, let me introduce you to Ebi Lead Painting Studios Japan. As a professional painter with over 30 years' experience and having a short stint working at the Games Workshop Nottingham studio as a miniature painter in the mid-1990s, I now work as a full-time professional miniature painter, having the joy to turn your old love metal and plastic miniatures into life with saturated colour and, of course, with goblin green bases. For inquiries, please contact me via email at evyled@gmail.com. That's EAVYLEAD@gmail.com. And please check out the links in the show description for my Facebook gallery page. And I hope to hear from you soon to start your dream project. Okay, well, let's talk about the streams, because I want to, another reason why I wanted to bring you on is to navigate people to your stream, because I noticed that, you know, the quality of stream, the conversation quality was really good and it's really interesting. And, you know, it's great to have all these other people in, these third party people coming in to talk about their products or, you know, things that they do. I know you guys have an association with the Army Painter and their products as they're a sponsor for your show. And you talk about Jake's store, and, you know, Jake talks about, which is really interesting to me, because, like, you know, the ins and outs of, you know, running a retail store and the hurdles that go with that and that kind of thing. And then you bring on, so I'm very interesting about, you know, something they're doing. So it might be the Tale of Four, is it the Four Warlords you do? Yep. So it's your sort of a mini painting challenge that you have internally with yourselves and a couple other guys in the States. Or it could be someone from a company talking about the products they produce and promote and that kind of thing. So you have a, you have a sort of a shared interest in promoting other people's products and that kind of thing in the hobby, which is great. So, yeah, I wanted to direct people to your live stream, and we were talking off air before that it will soon be available as a podcast, which would be great, because I think a podcast is a really good way to consume media these days as people commute from work and home and that kind of thing, or as they do their hobby. But also to check out your live stream, like it, subscribe, and hopefully catch along. If they're in the US, there's no reason why you can't do that on a, what's that, Tuesday evening for you guys, isn't it?
Tuesday night. Yep.
Which is that Wednesday morning for you guys, or is it Monday morning?
It's Wednesday morning for me, because I live in your future, my friend. Nice. I'm in a DeLorean, so nice. I can live in the future. So I'm. It's basically here. It's 9 a.m. here when it starts. It's your 8 p.m. or 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
7 yep. p.m. there, and the show, as you're saying, you go for about 2 hours.
Yep. And initially we said we'll go for like an hour or so, and then we found we were doing like an hour and a half, and then it was like we'll go for an hour and a half or so, and now we're doing pushing 2 hours. So it's probably an hour 45, hour 50 is kind of standard.
It's mostly my fault. Like when we have guests on, like I tend to tangent pretty hard, and we'll go down a rabbit hole. I mean, Dave does it too from time to time if it's the right thing.
Yeah.
Like if it's like the quality and consistency of a specific white paint, like Dave can talk for hours about that. Like it's his favorite brand of white paint or whatever color we're talking about. But no, it's a lot of it depends on the guests and, you know, what we're talking about and, you know, how off the rails that goes. And we have, in addition to answering questions that have been posed on our Facebook during the week, we also have people that will live chat during the show. So a lot of times we'll use questions from them, or the guest will answer questions, and that can kind of, you know, mess up our quote unquote timeline. But it's kind of the beauty of our show is like, we're the whole reason that Dave and I do it live is it was just less work than trying to record it and stuff. And it that's the beauty of doing it live, right? I mean, if it goes long, it goes long. If it's shorter, it's shorter. It doesn't really matter. No one's going to get shortchanged. I mean, like the average show is between, like Dave said, an hour and a half to an hour and 45. But
yep,
we do have a couple longer ones.
Yeah, no, that's good. So now, Dave, like you have a Facebook group as well, which you then share during your streams. They're amazing work. Hey, there's a lot of great painters in your community on Facebook.
Yeah, we have a Facebook group. The Build, Paint, Play community is the name of the Facebook page. So nice and straightforward. But we've got a lot of a lot of people there who are very avid hobbyists who are working on stuff every week. We have some folks who sort of pop in intermittently and share their work. We have a lot of people who share stuff that is very unique, I guess, within the group. Ideas that we haven't seen before, paint styles or paint approaches to painting. We have a guy at the moment, Stephen Ryder, who is posting a lot of classic miniatures, very, very old fantasy miniatures. So late 70s, early 80s Grenadier. That are exciting to see. Is like there have been a few times where it's like, oh, I remember that. That was like the first set of minis.
Yeah.
I had. And other times, like, oh my God, where did that come from? I had never seen that at all. And it'd be like, well, nobody ever shipped it to Australia. So I never saw it at the time. But I think one of the things you mentioned before, you asked about the sort of the philosophy behind build, paint, play.
Mm.
And one of the key things that we wanted to do was basically have a show where if we were presenting things in a positive light. We were looking for the positive in as many things as we could. Because there's certainly a lot of, I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of clicks going to people who are like, oh my goodness, have you seen what they've done now?
Doomsday. I can't stand it either, mate. I think that's one of the reasons why Dave and I get along so well, is like we both are pretty positive. Like Dave is very positive. I try to be, I tell my friends all the time, I am a hopeful pragmatist. So I think it helps out a lot. We won't spend, there's plenty of stuff that we all don't like, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But Dave and I try to not focus on that. Like, that's not what the show's about. The show's about, hey, what are you working on? What do you think is fun? What's the new thing you're excited about? Or what's the new model you're painting? Or what's the new paint line you want to try? And I think that for a lot of people, it's just kind of refreshing. I can't stand the whole, oh, I'm really upset about this thing. I'm not going to play Sisters. And guess why? And then you click and it's, you know, it's two nerds in a basement whinging about the new rule set and how they changed the sculpt and my rules are worse and there's no AP. And I just, that stuff drives me nuts. I can't handle that.
Yeah. Whereas we're two nerds in basements avoiding whinging about.
Exactly.
Completely different. Guys, I'm okay. I'm safe. I must be elevated beyond the basement.
It all averages out.
I wish I could be a basement dweller. Sounds fun. It sounds good. Especially in the summer.
It is definitely cooler in my basement in the summer.
Yeah.
That's good.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's so much negativity out there, so much clickbait. And I hate those. Like, I shouldn't say hate, but I don't look at them. I don't watch them because of that particular reason. I think there's enough negativity in the world already. Why would you want to bring it into your hobby? You know what I mean? So I always are attracted to positive people, you know, whether it be talking about things that I'm interested in or not. It just elevates that experience of, oh, wow, they're really passionate about this. And maybe it's not my cup of tea, but it's nice and refreshing to hear someone talking about it so positively. And it sort of attracts like-minded people. And I think, you know, you guys and what you do and the community you're building is, you know, you get followers and attract people who feel the same way. And we're all in the hobby for various different reasons, whether it's like me, you know, being this madman in Japan with stuff from the 1990s and, you know, trying to con people into playing games with me, or it's, you know, you guys doing the modern stuff and being really excited about that, you know, and, you know, like I said, one of your guys in your group's doing something from, you know, way back in the 70s. Collecting and painting models from Grenadier and Railpath or what have you. You know, we're all in this together doing something that we feel really passionate about. So it's like, you know, just find your niche and yeah, just get behind stuff that's really positive and motivating. That's really what it is at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we're very lucky. We've got in our in amongst our regular viewers that we have during like the live stream who are in the who pop into the chat. We've got folks who are running paint and takes and helping demo games at conventions. We've got folks who are salesmen for places like Alliance. We've got folks who are it's very much it's their hobby. They're not commercially involved in the industry, but they've got a particular take on things. And it also it helps us. Well, it certainly helps me realize that my experience or the things that I can experience, but not what everybody else can experience. So I'm lucky. I've got a great set of friends in Baltimore. Number of gaming groups that I can participate in, who are doing different stuff. So I can't just. But there are people who watch this who are like, it's that guy and two other guys in their small town in rural Canada that don't have that opportunity. Yeah. And so it's about looking for, okay, how can we help you participate more in this hobby you love?
So our community is small but mighty. Like I think that we have a pretty good I think we have a really good cross section of folks. Like we've got, like Dave was saying, there's a bunch of people who work in the industry, like a bunch of them that are on. We've got some people that are really well known kind of like in the streaming community that are on there. We've got some guys that are like widely recognized professional painters that are in there. But then, you know, we also have a bunch of guys who are just a bunch of friends of ours and some people who are just, I heard about this from a friend of a friend, like people who are like, we had a guy in a couple weeks ago was like, I've painted my first miniature, which is awesome. Like, I mean, that's kind of like what we're trying to do. And it's like you said, we're all excited about the same things. We all, if not exactly the same things, we're all like in the same aisle in the grocery store kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's been really fun.
Because, you know, like we've got guys in our community who play a lot of historical gaming. We've got guys who play, you know, really obscure games we've never heard of. And, it, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, I know we're going to talk about the old world when I was on there. And I said to Dave, look, mate, I haven't read the books. I don't know much about it. I don't think I'm the best person to talk about it really with you guys to give my analytical sort of, you know, deep dive into the rules and that kind of thing. You'll probably find someone better to talk about that with in your community. But even though the new old world is not really my, you know, slice of the pie,
the new old world.
But you know, I'm at the same time, I'm genuinely excited that other people are like, yeah, this is great. You know, we're going to start playing Warhammer again and that kind of thing. Even though they could have played Warhammer at any time, they could just picked up their old editions off the shelf and gave them a go. Or there's some fan based. Stuff out there as well that's free to download and you can go you know hammer and tongs with that. But it's great to see that this has brought up a new revival of people, and hopefully, and this is the main thing, we hopefully get new people in, younger people, right, who want to experience something new that's not a computer game, it's not something digitally downloaded, it's something that's intrinsically a hobby that is community based, it's getting
special. With
sitting at a table, having some snacks, you know, rolling some dice, having a laugh, having a fun. It's a very sociable thing. You know, whether it be a board game, you know, tabletop war game, just, you know, painting miniatures, anything like that, whether it's new, old, doesn't matter. You know, we're all trying to build a, you know, for my son and for, you know, Dave's kids or your kids, Jake, or whatever, all the kids that enter your store, we want to make sure the foundation's there to say, hey, you know, this is a great hobby. You should, you know, just give it a try.
Yeah.
Come and try a demo. You know what I mean? Maybe you're just interested in painting the miniatures. Maybe you're just a talented person. Maybe you're an artist and you want to make terrain or, you know, get into that side of the hobby. Maybe you're an artist. You want to draw and replicate the images you see in the books and illustrate those, you know, as a hobby. So we're all coming from different angles. And, I just want to see the hobby continue, you know, keep it going. Whatever shape or form it turns into be, you know what I mean? So, and that's about, you know, being positive, doing things like your initiative, doing that, you know, doing a live stream about it, you know, opening up a store and those kind of things where it's like a, a shop front where people can look in and say, wow, what's all this stuff? Because, you know, the exposure, that's the other thing that people don't get. There's just not enough places where people can see this stuff, you know?
I agree. It's definitely not a dying or a shrinking hobby, because it's bigger now than it's ever been.
Yeah.
But I think one of the craziest things to me is, like, I'll have people that'll wander into my store and, you know, like we talked about last time when we were on our show, we're all around the same age, right? Like, I'm in my late 40s. You guys are around the same. You're within
much,
a couple
much
of years
younger,
of
me. Much younger, Jake. Much younger, but
yeah, you're like 27.
At least.
But the rest of us, but like some guy wandered into my store and we're chatting for a few minutes. And I said to him, I was like, he's like, well, you know, I'm too old to play all this stuff. And I looked at him and I went, I bet I'm older than you. And he was like, well, I just turned 47. And I was like, I turned 48. I turned 49 this summer. And he was like, I was just never exposed to this stuff. And he's like, you must have had an older brother that was into it. I was like, nope. I was like, I'm the oldest brother. And he was like, oh, like, it's just so many people, like you said, so many people just never had the opportunity. And it's kind of a shame, right? Because it's like, well, I didn't get exposed to this. So I said to the guy, the best thing you can say to anybody, you can always get into it now. Like, it's not like you missed the ride. Like, the bus is still here. Just get on the bus. Like, you don't need to worry about it. Like, just, do you think this is cool? Then you should get into it. And we've been lucky. We've had a lot of people that do that. One of our newest members on our stream, the guy who was painting the Gundams, Dave, he popped into my store today, and he's never painted a Space Marine. So today he was like, hey, can I just buy a Space Marine? And I was like, there's no way to, and I was like, oh wait, I have the start, you know, getting started with Warhammer 40,000, the little magazine booklet that comes with a Necron and a Space Marine. And I was like, ooh, here. And he was like, oh, this is so cool. I can make a Space Marine. My son's going to be super excited. I was like, awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like that's what you want, right?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. That's so, definitely cool.
Yeah, that's really good. And I think nowadays, you know, just aside from Games Workshop, of course, they've got a very strong IP with Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and that kind of thing. But I want to talk to you guys about that too. I think the trends now within the wargaming industry is that they try to acquire some kind of big IP, like Marvel or Star Wars or the Song of Ice and Fire, George R. R. Martin's book series, Star Trek. You know, you could rattle off a whole heap of Batman, Harry Potter from Knight Models. You can rattle off a whole heap of different IPs where they're now trying to find, obviously, younger people or, you know, middle-aged people, whatever, trying to lure them in that way. Do you see you seeing that trend as well, Jake, with the product on your shelves, mate?
That is a good question. I would say that GW by far has the biggest, like, they're the 400-pound gorilla, right? Like, they are the Dunkin' Donuts or the Coca-Cola of the brand. So everybody knows what that is. Everybody knows, is familiar with it. If you are even remotely interested in mini wargaming, you know what Games Workshop is. Like, no one's confused about that. But in terms of the licenses, I think that part of the reason that sometimes they do really well and sometimes they don't. And I think part of it depends on not even the IP or even the company. It's how their deal was structured. And this is more like, I don't know how businessy you want me to get, but on the business side, like on the behind the scenes, like, we're going to make this thing. One of my favorites is Halo. So the guys who used to make Drop Fleet Commander, or sorry, not them. It was the Firestorm Armada. It was the guys who made Firestorm Armada. Firestorm Armada was basically a Battlefleet Gothic sort of surrogate, and it's really fun. The rules are great. It runs on the Armada system, so it's very similar. And they made a couple of other games. They make like a Wild West game.
Spartan Games, is it? Is it Spartan Games?
Is it Spartan? Okay. Spartan. So Spartan basically also made like a weird Wild West game called Wild West Exodus, and they make Dystopian Wars and Dystopian Rising. And they signed a deal to get the Halo license. That's right. I remember I was psyched. I was like, oh, that'll be really cool. Like, Pillar of Autumn and all like the Halo ships, like that'll be neat. And it was going to be a Starfleet like combat game.
Yep.
And the idea was that they were going to expand and then make a miniatures combat game with like, you know, Master Chief and Spartans and Warthogs and like all the, you know, the alien races and stuff. And it's a huge license.
Yeah.
But the deal that they signed was super IP restrictive. And then on top of that, the amount of money they had to pay just to get access to the IP, it drowned them. Like it literally pulled them under. And wow. You know, the starter set for Halo War or Halo Starfleet Battles was like $300. It was $299.99. And again, for those of you familiar with Battlefleet Gothic or like Man of War, any of the naval games, it's the same kind of thing. So it was $299. It came with a rule book, you know, some Covenant ships, some, you know, United States or UNSC ships.
Yep.
But they were only making something insane. Like they were making like $30 profit on the game. And I was like, how did that happen? And it was like, well, it was a small print run and we did a ton of front loading to make all the ships and make all the machinery up front. And we front loaded that. And then the deal was anytime we sell one, the company gets like, they get like, it was like $50 or $60. That's just what you write a check to them for every time you sell one. So it just, now I'm sure there were other problems too, but like that was one of the big ones that I heard that kind of pulled them under. So it wasn't that the license wasn't popular. It's the fact that I don't think that enough people A, knew about it, and B, they didn't have the money left over to do marketing because of the way their settlement was structured. And then they weren't making enough money on it. So they were like front loading all of this work and then it just drowned them. Yeah. And a bunch of their stuff still exists. It got bought by some other companies. Like I think the guys at War Cradle or Warsenal,
I think
one of those
War Cradle. War Cradle. Yeah.
Picked it up.
So like they bought like Wild West Exodus and Dystopian Wars and all that stuff. And
yeah.
Firestorm Armada, I think, was the old one. And
yeah.
And they were great games, but it just pulled that company under. I think that other companies have been really smart. Like CMON, you were talking about the Song of Ice and Fire game.
Yeah.
So our buddy Brian Steele like worked on that a little bit with some of their testing, and Mike Chenal, like I've met Mike a handful of times, you know, good solid designer. I'm gonna say
that, Jake, when you next time you speak with him, don't call him Mike. Make sure it's Michael.
Sorry. He likes Mike. I shorten everybody's names. It's just a habit. But so anyway, so when they got that license, they didn't go to George R. R. Martin and get that license, because at that point he was working with HBO and it would have cost them. I don't even want to think about what it would have cost them.
Yeah.
Dark Sword Miniatures had a deal with George from way before that, when he was still doing like, he was writing like book three or something.
Yep.
And they were putting out miniatures. Like you could get like single guys and different characters. It's like, oh, you can get the Hound and Metal. Like, oh, cool. Metal. So they went through them and they worked out a deal with Dark Sword. So like when you buy the Song of Ice and Fire stuff, on the back of the box, it says CMON Miniatures. And then it says George R. R. Martin. And then it says Dark Sword Miniatures.
Yeah.
Dark Sword didn't do anything other than let them use the license that they had. Like, and again, I don't know what the agreement was, but that was how they did it. So it was really smart. They were able to do it and have access to it. And despite all the work that Michael did and everybody else building it, if they hadn't gotten a good deal on the licensing rights, it would have killed them. They wouldn't have been able to make the game. And it's obviously it depends on the size of the company and like what you want to do and the scope of the project. And it's like if you and Dave got access to Mad Max, it's like, okay, are we making a Mad Max role-playing game, like a pen and paper game? Are we making a Mad Max miniatures game? Are we making a Mad Max tabletop war game? Is it a skirmish game or is it a war game? Like it all depends on.
We're making Fury Road. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Sure. I'm in.
And maybe a role-playing game, but Fury Road.
I'm in. I'm 100% on board. Like, where do we? You guys heard it here first on Crown of Command. Dave Taylor gave us the rights to make. I'm pretty sure since he's Australian, I think we can just make a Mad Max game. I think that's just.
Yeah.
I think it's required.
Yeah, it's not even an option. We have to make that game.
It's culturally required. I'm obligated. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. If we don't, they're just going to mail Dave a crate of Huntsman spiders and then.
Okay, they're not venomous.
I know they're just giant and scary looking. But yeah, so it a lot of it depends, but back to your original question, I think that some of the other IPs are really clever. The song game, like I said, is great. And they're putting out a new one called Tactics. It's Song of Ice and Fire Tactics, I think. And that's, again, going to be a skirmish-based game. It's only going to be a handful of models, whereas Song is it's a tabletop rank and flank, giant blocks of units that have flanks and rears, and you got to worry about your charging and, like, what you're hitting. And it's a really fun game. And then you've got companies like Asmodee, who is a giant corporate juggernaut, and they own, like, 37 different gaming companies. 72% of the board game industry is owned by Asmodee. They own Fantasy Flight Games and Z-Man Games and Rocket Dog and Space Cowboy and Repo Studios and Libelude. Like, they own so many of them. But Fantasy Flight, kind of for a long time, Fantasy Flight's had a Star Wars license.
Yeah.
Because they made, what, like, Imperial Assault and then, like, X-Wing and Armada and all that stuff. And they're really good. But the Batman game, the Night Models game, it might as well be, it's a random skirmish game that lives in obscurity. Like, it's a fun game, and the models are great.
Yeah.
But it's another sort of, like, I don't even know how to, it's like being into, like, Mordheim.
Right.
Like, Mordheim is a great game, but it has a very specific fan set, right? Like, it's not, you're not going to see that everywhere. Even GW doesn't promote it anywhere. It's a quote unquote dead game. I know more people that play that than play the Batman game.
Yeah, I know. I've never seen it played either.
it's
like
the models are great
games, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
From those really small companies, you just never see them get much game time or play time on tables. But there's something alluring about those smaller games too. I don't know why. I've always been attracted to the sort of, you know, the underground type games. I don't know why. I love
Ratchet. I knew about this before.
Yeah. Like Rackham from France, you know, that was like a really underground game. Infinity from Corvus Belli, when that was like a really underground game, no one knew about it. I was really attracted to that kind of stuff as well.
I think there's a pretty big thing there, though. The two games you just brought up.
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing about those games? The models are gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly.
The minis are amazing looking.
Yeah, the artwork, the miniatures.
Yeah, and that goes a long way. I think that if you have, like, breathtaking looking miniatures, I think that they're going to sell them. It doesn't matter what the IP is.
Yeah,
like,
that's right. Yeah.
We can make something up right now. As long as the minis are gorgeous, it's going to sell.
Yeah.
I would say the biggest sort of pushback I would say on a lot of the smaller scale games that you're talking about is I know that if I take my Warhammer, if I take my Space Marine army and I'm going out to like in the summer, Dave and I are going to San Diego Comic-Con to paint lessons.
Mm.
We're going to teach paint lessons. We'll be there for like the week.
Oh, brilliant.
But I know if I bring my Space Marine army, I can get a game in.
Exactly.
I know I'll be able to get a game. if I show up with my Batman warband, I don't know, like maybe. So with those smaller games, part of the reason I think people get attracted to these games is if I come to you and we're all hanging out regularly and I'm like, Dave, I painted up some Space Marines. This Warhammer game looks pretty cool. And Dave goes, those miniatures are pretty cool. You know what? I'm going to paint up some of those guys. And then we talk to you and we're like, hey, Dave and I painted armies from Warhammer 40K. Like, we're going to try to play it this weekend. Do you want to play? It's like, oh, well, my friends are into this. I'm going to play it. Whereas if you come to us and you're like, hey, I found this obscure game. Have you guys ever heard of this? And Dave and I are like, I don't know that game. And it's like, oh, do you want to play it? And it's like, I don't even know any stores around here that carry that stuff. It's just, I think it's just, it's more barriers to entry into what is already a,
yes,
that's like right. a serious, not serious is the wrong word, but like what is already like a pretty involved hobby.
Yeah.
So I whenever you add more layers of obstacles, I just don't think it's necessarily the best idea.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. And I think that's a key point there. It's one of the barriers that is removed by using a well-known IP, by companies picking up those or deciding, rather than creating our own miniatures game with our own lore and our own story and reasons for these miniatures to exist. If you go with Star Wars, you go with Marvel, you go with DC, go with Horizon Zero Dawn, that kind of thing. There's a larger amount of the population who understand what that is kind of inherently. So, you know, then it just becomes, okay, so I get the this representation of General Kenobi and Grievous, whatever it is. Is it, he also General Grievous?
Yeah, General Grievous. Hello, General Kenobi.
So it's a, they know who those things are, and they
grasp
the concept much more easily that is a piece representing Kenobi, this is a piece representing Grievous, and then I can smash them together. Sure, there are some rules that tell me how to smash them together. Rather than going, what's this guy riding this lizard?
I don't
get it.
Yeah.
It's so it strips away that sort of thing, which is why I think that we are seeing more IPs being mined for that kind of thing. Because it reduces that, removes that particular barrier. The companies that are making their own stuff are doing so at a much slower pace. It's a much more organic kind of build for it. So, or they're copying, they're creating proxies for other sort of systems.
Yeah.
So there's that thing where, is it good? I think it's getting more people playing. Is it unique and innovative? Not so much. So there's that balance there.
But maybe it also it spans across from movies, comic books, role playing games, board games, miniature games. So you've got that sort of interrelationship between all of those things where they're going to catch you at some point. Somewhere along that line, you're going to see the movie. Oh, there's a board game. There's Monopoly, who's brought out a DC Comics, Avengers style, Monopoly set. And then, then you stumble across something else in the store that has, there's Games Workshop. They've got their own little thing, or some other company selling their miniatures or board game that have the same kind of IP relationship to that. So we're somehow getting, because the Song of Ice and Fire, I got into that because I knew that I was really enjoying the HBO TV series. I knew about the characters. I knew about the houses. And I thought, I like rank and flank games. And I looked at the miniatures. I thought, okay, I know they're PVC, but, I like metal models, but I'll give it a pass and I'll give it a go. It's actually a really good game. And if I was going to introduce anybody to like a mass tabletop game, I think A Song of Ice and Fire does that beautifully. It's just got really great rules. It's a living rule book. You've got everything on an app. You can download it for free. You've got everything at your fingertips. And I think it's just a really, intuitively done game.
It also has a couple of really nice things going for it. Like the miniatures they're really nice. Like the sculpts are gorgeous. Their first wave stuff, even like if you look back at it now compared to like the new models that have come out, it's not quite as good. They're still great. Like the new models are just better. Like they've just gotten better at it. But the sculpts are, Dave, it's all Big Chow Creative, right? I think all the
Child's doing all of those sculpting.
Yeah, so the sculpts are amazing. The characters are phenomenal. They make some of my favorite units. Like I think the She Bears is like one of my favorite. The Mormont She Bears are like one of my favorite models in like ever. Like they're just gorgeous sculpts. But you're right. It's also a solid gameplay. Again, tip of the cap to Michael Chennault. He's done a phenomenal job with that game, and he's put a lot of time and energy into making sure that game plays the right way, and it handles the way that it handles, and that, like you said, the fact that it can like update in real time. There's no like, oh, my army stinks. It's like, it's cool. Like they just updated it. Like they fixed that thing or they fixed whatever. It's also, as a consumer, it's got a great price point. Like you're talking $35 for a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you're in Australia, so all your prices are like double or whatever. But it's still very reasonable for a price point. And they're the big starter boxes, the one player starter sets. And there's like, I think there's 8 of them now.
Yeah,
they're great, and every army plays different. They're not the same.
Yeah,
like if you just want to smash someone's face in, and you don't want to have to worry about like, oh, I have to be cunning, and I have to do this thing, and you play the Starks. Mm. If you want to just hit stuff super hard and be kind of like a paper tiger, then you want to play like you know, the Night's Watch, because you hit super hard, but they don't have a ton of armor. Yeah. If you want to be kind of like tricksy and move stuff around and, you know, take casualties and then get extra bonuses, you want to play like the Greyjoys, because they look like they're big, scary, heavy infantry. They are not. They are designed to kind of hit and fade. Yeah, like the first time we played them, they look like a bunch of Norse Reavers.
Yeah.
So my business partner, Ben, we were at Gamma, and he got one of those boxes, and I bought the Stark box, and we were like, oh, cool, let's have our, you know, different, you know, my Stark guys with hauberks are going to fight your Viking guys with hauberks, and this will be fun. And after the first interaction, Ben was like, oh, okay, I see. My guys are not meant to do that. Like, I should not be throwing them at your heavy units. But it's just, it's really fun. There's so many different variables, and they all feel different.
Yeah, switch out the attachments, and you're just playing a different game. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's another great mentality behind
that. That's excellent.
The non-combat character on the little platform thing, super cool. And they all do different things depending on who you take.
Yeah. That's great. So there's some really good stuff out there, really good innovative games out there, game-wise and that kind of thing. So, yeah, like you said, I think too, Jake and Dave, I think we're living in the best time in terms of like the war game hobby. It's not going to go away. It's not dying. We've got plenty of people out there, plenty of games companies investing into the production and development of these games. So it's just great. So, mate, look, we're almost out of time here today, and I wanted to firstly say thank you so much for coming on to talk about the Build, Paint, Play program, community, I should say, the live stream. Maybe it's like a secret US program, maybe, I don't know, but yeah. In your bunkers, maybe that's what you're sort of planning all along. But yeah, I want to say to people, the links are down below, check them out in the podcast, go and click on that to get to the YouTube channel and the Facebook group so they can join and participate and at least, you know, have a look and try it out and see if they enjoy it. But I know they'll enjoy the chats and on the live stream a lot. And now, Jake, what's the name of your store, buddy?
Alpha Omega Hobby.
That's it. Alpha Omega Hobby. So
Alpha Omega Hobby, singular.
Right. I've checked
as in the Royal. It's all hobbies. It encompasses all hobbies.
Right. Mate, you've got a really slick website. I must say it's absolutely amazing. So I'll have to talk to you at some point getting that the Song of Ice and Fire stuff over here. Because
I ship stuff. We ship stuff everywhere. During the pandemic, we had a huge uptick in online sales, obviously, because you couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I had a guy in Australia place an order for, it was probably like $400 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And his shipping was like $260. And I remember calling the guy and I was like, are you sure you want to do this? And he's like, yeah, like nobody has it. You guys are the only ones that have it on the website. And I just want to make sure I get it. So I was like, look, while I have you on the phone, is there anything else that you're looking for? Because the shipping isn't going to change. So if you want to get more stuff, I'll add it. And he was like, let me check. And so he wanted, like, I added a bunch of paint and he added a couple more units. But again, like, we ship stuff everywhere. I ship stuff to guys in Japan. So you will not be my first Japanese customer, but.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much again for both of you coming on and taking your time. I know you're doing a bit of hobby, which is great. I don't want to take that time away from you, but enjoy the rest of your evening. And Dave, is there any last words, mate, you want to say to the Crank and Mouse community?
I just say thanks very much for listening to us, and if you like what we heard, come check us out.
All right, cool.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Josh.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much.
No problem. I really enjoyed our chat today. I think we covered a lot of good topics as well. And I just want to point out too that Dave also has Dave Taylor's Art of Book series. I'll leave a link in that for Dave's website so you can check out some of the amazing work people are doing out there in the hobby world.
They are fantastic.
All right, guys. Well, so thanks again. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your night and get back to your hockey game, mate. Okay. They need you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye. See you. Bye.